pre-Gaza delegation ship, hoping to deliver humanitarian supplies, was stopped by the Israeli Navy earlier this month. Among the nearly 100 U.S. peace activists was former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney and Irish peace activist and Nobel laureate Mairead Maguire. McKinney and others had been in custody since Tuesday of last week, but could have been released earlier if they signed a document admitting they violated Israel's blockade. We're joined today by Cynthia McKinney to get the details on the seizure.
Congresswoman McKinney, welcome to Law and Disorder.
Thank you so much for having me.
As I said, it's a surprise to have you back, but we're glad. Not a surprise. We knew you'd get back, but I know you were in Israeli jail. But why don't you tell us a little bit about how you wound up in an Israeli jail? What were you doing there?
My mother would be interested in my response to that question as well. It's quite an unusual thing, I think, for anyone to get a glimpse inside an Israeli prison. And so there were 21 of us on the Free Gaza boats. The Free Gaza movement had been able to get two boats, the Free Gaza, which they were going to leave in Gaza as a replacement for the fishermen boats that had been taken away from the Palestinian fishermen. And then there was the Ariane, which also was known as the Spirit of Humanity. As it turned out, the Free Gaza boat was not allowed to set sail. And so the 21 of us then embarked upon our journey in the Spirit of Humanity boat.
How big is that boat?
Well, it's really just a ferry. And while you could tell that the volunteers had put a lot of love in refurbishing the boat with the paint and, putting hooks in and making it a sort of a livable place for a 30-hour journey, which is the length of time that it would take that ferry. And the ferry was so slow that, honestly, I could walk faster than the ferry went.
But where does it leave from, Cynthia?
It leaves from Larnaca, Cyprus. That boat won't be leaving from anywhere anymore because it was destroyed by the Israeli military. They took some kind of huge magnetic item that held the boat, the ferry, in suspension and then shook it violently.
Oh my gosh, did you see that actually?
I didn't see that, but one of our Free Gaza 21 saw it.
Okay, so let me go back. You get on this boat in Cyprus, and it's 30 hours. Was it rough? Is it sunny? Is there a place to sleep on the boat? What happens?
It was the most unusually calm day on the sea that I think anyone had experienced. It was absolutely beautiful. Then we were on the sea for approximately 37 hours because the estimated length of the trip, if we had been able to make it to our destination, was 30 hours. But with the Israeli intercept, they did something that was unusual. They did not take us directly to Ashdod port, which is where we ended up. They took us in a very circuitous route. Now, of course, I would not have known that, but we had people on the boat who had successfully made it to Gaza before by boat, so they knew the route. What they came back and said to us was that this was most unusual, and they are wondering if the Israelis have not already started mining the natural gas that has been discovered in the Palestinian waters off of Gaza.
So you're sitting on this boat with how many other people, Cynthia?
20 other people.
And what's the first hint you had that you might not get to Gaza?
Oh, gosh, we didn't know that we weren't going to get to Gaza until they actually boarded the boat.
So how far off the Israeli coast roughly were you when you saw the Israeli craft and they boarded the boat?
Well, while we were still in international waters, the Israelis had threatened us. It was nighttime. They threatened us, and they did something that they didn't do with the Dignity. Remember, I was on board the Dignity when they rammed it.
I remember that, right.
Right. Well, this time, they disabled the GPS. they sort of provided an escort, according to the captain, they provided an escort for the boat trying to push us into Israeli waters, but our captain is a professional. So that tactic didn't work. They also utilized something that I've never seen before, like some wave-making machine, because they literally shook us. They shook us up and down and up and down, and the GPS was also turned off. All communications were disrupted. I think that also was an effort to disorient us, to get us off course.
Let me go back for a second. They boarded the boat to get rid of the GPS, or they did that?
No. They did that prior to the boarding.
They did these wave machines or whatever, and they disoriented the GPS before they even boarded.
Yes, that's correct. I think they were trying to get us into, by accident, Israeli water so they could, you know, say that we had made a mistake and we weren't on course. But that did not happen. So then they had to regroup, and they just sat and waited for us to enter Gazan territorial waters. And we were in mile 19 of Gaza's territorial waters, which extend 20 miles out. That's when these four speedboats came very quickly. As I said, our ferry was so slow. They approached us very quickly, and then eight soldiers dressed like ninjas with the ski mask, the faces completely hidden from us, they commandeered the boat, ejected the captain from the captain's chair, and then they took over the boat. And as they were driving the boat, it was almost as if I felt that they were trying to damage the boat while they were driving the boat, because they drove it too fast, and they drove it so roughly. The seas, it was almost kind of spiritual in a way, that while we were driving the boat, the seas were so calm. And then when they took over the boat, the seas became very rough and things began, glass was shattering, things were falling off. And it was almost as if they were doing this on purpose, because they didn't stop. I did ask them to stop. One of the more poignant moments after they boarded the boat, they rounded us all up, put us in one room, told us to sit down and shut up. We had to hand over all of our belongings to them, and right now, all of the belongings had not yet been returned to everyone, even though now we're all out, so we'll never see those. But there was one soldier who looked at one of the other American women, the other American woman, and said, you know, what's in that bag? He was chastising her because she had failed to turn it over. Well, she didn't think very much of it. When he challenged her, she said, crayons. He didn't understand her. So he said, what did you say? And she said, crayons for the children. And he had his gun pointed at her. She said that at that moment, his eyes touched her eyes. You know, they looked at each other. He looked at her in the eyes and lowered his gun. And it was almost as if for that moment, he thought to himself, you know, why am I doing this? All they have is crayons.
When they boarded, there were eight, you said, ninja types, and they had what kind of weapons?
Big guns.
They were big guns, right.
Big guns, little guns, some kind of arrow or something, you know, I don't know.
Oh, my gosh.
Maybe a harpoon or...
Wow.
They were very well outfitted, and this is the thing, you know, this is all provided by U.S. taxpayers. These are the gifts that our government makes available to Israel, and then they use them against people who are taking crayons for children.
We basically supply almost entirely the Israeli military.
That's right. Yeah. And people need to know that. And I've called several times for the Congress not to pass any appropriation bill that has money or weapons for the Israeli military. I've called on President Obama not to sign any appropriation bill, and we just continue to make the call.
That's for sure. Now, let's get you back on the boat. So they board the boat. You guys are all in a room. Let me ask you one question. How frightened were you, or were others, but you in particular?
Well, of course, we didn't know what they were going to do to us, but we understood that we were putting our lives on the line. We understood that. when we left Larnaca, and particularly after what happened with the Dignity.
Right after you were rammed earlier in another effort, you realized anything could happen on this, really, anything.
That's right. That's right. So we recognized that anything could happen. Of course, we hoped for the better, and we did everything that we could contacting the White House. I personally contacted the White House several times, contacted the Secretary of State's office by email several times, contacted. And then finally, they made the decision. They got we presume that they got an order to go ahead and board. So they did that. And we were taken to, by this very circuitous route, to Ashdod Port, and we were in the hands of the military. And basically, the military can do whatever they want to do. They can take whatever they want to take. All you can do is say, we want our things back, but because it is the military, they have the final say in what they do. We were forced to emerge from the boat with our hands up in the air.
Amazing.
Prisoners, you know, and some were handcuffed.
Some people were handcuffed?
Yes, they were handcuffed because the Israeli soldiers were very rough with Mairead McGuire, who observed them take down one of the women. I didn't observe that, but she observed it, and she protested.
Of course, she's the Nobel Peace Prize winner from Ireland, right?
Yeah, she's a big threat, you know.
right.
The soldiers, she protested to the soldiers. The soldiers then roughed her up with bad language, and, you know, it was a scene. And the men came to her rescue, and those men who came to her rescue got handcuffed.
I got you. Okay, so after you get off at the port, did they try and interview you? Did they take you to a prison? What did they do?
They basically told us that we had violated the law, and they took us into custody. They did full body searches on us. They had the women to search us. We didn't have to remove our clothing, but that was just their choice. On previous occasions, I'm told, every kind of search you can imagine has been done. So we were lucky that we only got the body search with our clothes on. We were held by the military for several hours. They transferred us over. Some people were allowed to see their things. Some people were not allowed to see their things. And then they transferred us to a detention facility.
What day of the week was this, Cynthia?
Oh, gosh. We were apprehended by the Israelis on the 30th of June. I arrived in the U.S. yesterday, and we were released, yes, at midnight yesterday.
That would be Tuesday, July 7th.
That's correct.
Right. So you were in for quite a while. You were in custody for half a dozen days, almost a week.
Yes. We were transferred from the detention center to the prison, the full prison.
Where was the prison? In the same town, Ashdod?
No, the prison is called Romley Prison, and it's somewhere near Tel Aviv.
Were you kept with the others or kept with other women? What was the prison like?
We were mixed in with the prison population.
And the prison population is mostly Israeli or also Israeli-Palestinian or what?
No, it was amazing, at least where we were. These were all young women of African and Asian descent.
Really?
There was one Russian woman, and there was one woman from Moldova.
Oh, my gosh. Do you happen to know what they were doing there? I mean, in the prison. I don't know why they were in Israel, but
yes, they were in prison because they didn't have valid visas, or it was some immigration problem.
Right. In fact, I understand now that in Israel, that rather than employ Palestinians or Israeli-Palestinians, what Israel is doing is essentially getting immigrants from the rest of the world rather than give Palestinians jobs.
Many of the women said to us that they responded to ads. The ads were for employment. This was back in Ethiopia. There is this active recruitment of others, and I presume for the Filipinas as well, there was an active recruitment.
I think that's right. Now, let's get you're in the prison. How did you ever get yourself out of the prison? Were there conditions on your release? Did they try and get conditions on your release?
Well, the system was very interesting in that the Israelis did not want us to meet with our attorneys, and they actively blocked our efforts to meet with our attorneys. It was only because one of the Free Gaza 21 knew the attorneys and recognized the attorney when she saw him inside the building, when she went outside for a smoke, that we even knew that the attorneys were inside the building looking for us. So when it was my turn to go and meet with the Ministry of Interior, I told the gentleman, the representative, I know that our attorneys are here, and you've denied us the opportunity even to meet with them.
That's wonderful.
And it was only after that that we were able to meet for a maximum of 10 minutes. Now, not everybody got 10 minutes to meet with the attorney. That was another farce. We were given documents by the Israeli authorities. They tried to get us to sign one document. That document was in English, but it was a confession that we had broken the law. So, of course, we weren't going to sign that document because we didn't break any law except loving our fellow human beings and respecting their human rights.
Good for you, Cynthia.
Yes. But then, interestingly, other documents that were given to us were given to us in Hebrew. Now, just imagine those innocent young Ethiopian or Filipina women who the Filipinas would speak English, but the Ethiopian women don't speak Hebrew and they don't speak English. And the documents that are given to them are given to them in Hebrew. What kind of justice is that?
Not much, that's for sure. How did you get out finally?
Well, the deportation process ran its course, and we were deported. We were held in prison for being in a country that we didn't intend to enter, and we were deported from that country even though we had no intention of entering that
country. You're forcibly taken to a country you didn't want to enter, and then they deport you from that country because you illegally entered it. Nice. So maybe they should deport the people who took you in.
Or prosecute them.
Yeah, right, exactly. So they deported you almost a week later, and then you flew back from where to where? From Tel Aviv to New York?
From Tel Aviv to New York, and then from New York to Washington, D.C. I missed my son's first day in law school.
I'm sorry to hear that, but congratulations having a son in law school. How do you look at the movement to open Gaza? I know that there's people who've gone in through land, through the Rafah entrance. Some people have been turned back at the Israeli entrance. Your boat now twice you have been unable to get in, although I think the stir you've caused has been very, very important toward bringing attention to Gaza. But what's your thinking now politically?
Well, in terms of the Free Gaza movement, and of course, you know, I cannot speak for them, but I think that they have no intention of stopping. They view correctly that it is a right of the Palestinians to have access to their territorial waters. That is the purpose of the Free Gaza commitment to going in by sea. The Palestinians should not have to ask the Israelis for anything. They have those miles of territorial waters that should be open to them and to their fishermen, by the way, without the boats being confiscated. But it's clear that there are tremendously important natural gas deposits that are there that have been discovered. And who knows, that perhaps contracts have already been let. We don't know.
So the struggle continues, and we're really proud to have you on our show. Cynthia, you've done some amazing work as a congresswoman, as well as afterwards. You haven't let any grass grow under your feet.
I was supposed to be writing a book, and I went to Haiti and updated what I had already done. I think I need to go back to Haiti now because I have another chapter.
You've been writing in Haiti? Really? That's great.
Yes.
A place very close to my heart. So, you know, I remember once, and I'll end on this sort of, unless you have any other comment, someone wrote a book on our representation of the Haitian Guantanamo people many years ago, in the early 90s under Aristide. And I said, there's no good politicians that I ever knew except for Cynthia McKinney. So,
oh, my goodness. So
Cynthia,
much.
We miss you dearly there, but we're really glad that you're in the thick of it all.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and your audience.
Thank you, Cynthia. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Visit us online at lawanddisorder.org for archived programs and links to many of the issues we discuss. That's lawanddisorder.org.